Jones. This is East Coast Bias. Noon, ladies and gents. Today is Friday, July 6, 2007. I am Jason Mish alongside with Brendan Canny. How are you doing, Brendan?
Very good, Jason. How are you?
Not bad, not bad. Good to hear from you. And we got a lot to talk about today, so let's get right into it.
All right.
We have news to report from the NBA. Grant Hill has agreed to a deal with the Suns, a two-year deal with $1.8 million for the first year and a player option for the second year. So with Grant Hill signing with the Suns, is this a good move?
I see this as a good move for the Suns because they get a veteran talent in Grant Hill for, you know, a measly $1.8 million, which isn't that much, I mean, considering the inflation of NBA salaries nowadays. Gives Hill the chance to challenge Boris Diaw for the starting small forward role. And Phoenix needed help anyway at the small forward position because they traded away James Jones on draft night. So I think this gives Grant Hill a good shot at going for his first championship ring. And I really think that this is a good move overall for the Phoenix Suns. What do you think?
It's a bad move for the Phoenix Suns, a good move for Grant Hill. First off, Grant is over the hill. You know, he's getting older. I'll read off some career stats to you. First 6 years in the league with the Pistons, 21 points per game, 5 All-Star appearances. Last 7, which have been injury-marred, with the Magic, only 16 points per game, 2 All-Star appearances. So it shows the drop-off. But with this addition to the Suns, it makes them even worse on the defensive end because he's slow, you know, not defensive-minded. And that's the one thing the Suns need. They need somebody who's going to be able to play on the defensive end. And that's the only thing that stopped them from winning the championship, in my eyes, the last couple of years.
Well, I mean, I don't know if I agree with that sentiment because, I mean, they got screwed this postseason.
They didn't get screwed.
Yeah, they did. Yeah,
you know, Amari and Boris Diaw shouldn't have left the bench.
Oh, give me a break. That's like the dumbest rule of all time.
No, well, it's a rule, though. I mean, it's a rule in place. There's a precedent.
The Suns would have won that series had that not have happened. So let's not even talk about defense.
Ifs and buts are candy and nuts. I mean,
okay. Anyway.
Everybody says. Go ahead.
Grant Hill. I don't know why you're dogging him. He averaged 14 points a game last year, coming off the bench, 4 boards, 2 assists. I mean, it's not like, even if he's over the hill, which I agree with you. I mean, they're still getting they're still getting 14 more points a game for $1.8 million.
But my point is, that's true. And you know what? He's a good character guy that'll help the continuity of the team. You know, you want those high character guys.
He's a veteran presence, although to go along with Steve Nash.
And I think
that's huge. Okay.
You know, I'm not even sure if he's going to make it in the rotation. We'll see. I don't know what what their plans are with him today. Is he, you know, like you said, are they going to put him right in the starting lineup?
Who cares if he gets off the bench? He's only getting paid $1.8 million. It's not like he's getting paid $10 million and he's expecting to, you know, start. I mean, I don't think he'll relish in the bench role, and I think he'll come off the bench, to tell you the truth, and I think Diaw will be the one starting, but I still think that Grant Hill is going to make a significant contribution to the Suns this season.
The thing is, their rotation is, you know, a 7 or 8 man thing, and, you know, James Jones hurts him that, you know, losing him, but you got Nash, Bellemare, and Stoudemire, Barbosa, Kurt Thomas, Boris Diaw. You know, you look at him last year, a guy like Jalen Rose, who, you know, on most teams might have gotten some playing time, still a decent, you know, player in this league. You know, he didn't even get to play. But, you know, again, this is a good move for Grant Hill, who is a good guy and deserves a chance at a ring. So it's a good move on his part, not exactly, in my opinion, for the Suns.
Okay.
So we'll agree to disagree,
yeah.
Well, with the All-Star game next Tuesday, yesterday, Chris Young and Hideki Okajima won the 32nd spot on the All-Star teams, which are actually voted by the fan. And so they each won the fan vote from a list of 5 players, and they won that yesterday.
Right.
This brings up 2 questions that come to mind. First off, Brendan, do you like fan voting in the All-Star game? And second, did the fans get it right with Young and Okogie?
I would tend to say that I don't like the All-Star voting because it's just a glorified popularity contest.
It is.
But I was pleasantly surprised this year and was very happy with the fan voting for once. I think everyone really deserved their starting position in there. I kind of disagree with the Barry Bonds thing, but it is in San Francisco, and he is having a pretty good season, so I can see why they, you know, why Barry Bonds got into it. And as far as the two players who voted in, I couldn't be happier. Hideki Okajima, I mean, is pitching fantastically. I mean, he's got a .88 ERA, and Chris Young is 8-3 with a 2.00 ERA, and I think both of these guys were great selections. I mean, you can make a case for a lot of the guys that they had on this list, and you can make a case for some of the guys that got left off, such as in the NLs, like Brandon Webb, rookie Tom Gorzelaney from Pittsburgh, who probably should have went in instead of Freddie Sanchez, in my opinion.
I agree with you.
And Roy Oswalt actually just got in because John Smoltz kind of opted out of it, and Carlos Zambrano also deserved it. So there's a lot of good players, but I mean, I have no problem with Chris Young being in there. And like I said, Okajima is pitching great. Quote unquote rookie, 31 years old, played the majority of his baseball career in Japan, and it's nice to see a guy like Hideki Okajima get in there when guys that were on the ballot like Roy Halladay and Jeremy Bonderman and Kelvin Escobar were on there too, and the fact that he got 4.3 million votes in 4 days is astonishing. So, very happy for him.
To go back to the first question I posed,
right?
You know, is it good for fans to vote? And
right.
You know, I agree with you. For the most part, they got it right with the starters. Just to mention a couple problems I had: David Wright, who's not having a tremendous year. I would have liked to see Miguel Cabrera in there. He's batting like .337, you know, high .330s. So
mm-hmm.
That would have been a guy I liked at third. The Bonds thing you brought up, you know, not sold on it, but it's in San Fran, so I'll let that one go.
Right.
And we mentioned this on the last podcast. David Ortiz playing first. He's the starting first baseman, even though he played 7 games at first. So, but for the most part, you know, the fans aren't getting it, really screwing it up. And it's good for, you know, the fans to be a part of it,
well,
even though it is a meaningless game.
Let me pose you this question then. If we both agree that we're not thrilled with fan voting, although this year they did happen to get it right, what would be a good system for you? Would you want baseball writers to pick them, or would you
that,
like a split vote where, kind of like they're doing on Who's Now, where panelists get 30% of the vote and then fans get 70%? What would you like to see happen?
You know, first off, the baseball writers thing would be good because, you know, obviously they know what they're talking about.
Right.
But also, if you look at what the NFL does, they let players and coaches vote. And I think that's that's where you're going to get the least amount of error.
But do you think that would become a popularity contest as well? Where
no, because player, well, you know, I think some of the time players want to appease, you know, kind of give like lifetime achievement.
Right.
You know what I mean? In terms of giving it to a guy who's just been around and maybe he's not having the greatest year, but, you know, they give it to him anyway. You know, so either of them, but, you know, at least we have something to vote for in the fans. And I
right.
think, so we get to pick the starters. We don't get to pick the, you know, the replacements or the second string guys. But then, they added this 32nd man a couple years ago, and I think this is good. You know, it's like, okay, we get to pick the first batch, they get to pick the second, and if we disagree with a guy they didn't pick in the second batch, we get to, you know, kind of correct them.
Right, right. Yeah, it's nice, but, and like you said, I mean, I wouldn't mind having the players and the coaches vote just as long as, because I still think the fans should have a say. I just don't think the fans should, you know, rule outright. I think that a percentage-based kind of system where we have coaches and players pick along with fans would be the best thing for the All-Star game.
when we look at this 32nd man voting, to bring that up quickly, you know, I think the fans got it, you know, hit the nail on the head.
Yeah, I think they did too.
Both extremely deserving. Both of them led, had the best ERAs of both of the five. You know, each league had five choices.
Right.
They each led in ERA. A couple things about Okajima. The .88 ERA is tremendous. And he's been that seventh or eighth inning guy who's been reliable. And the link from the good Boston Red Sox starters to Papelbon, who's been tremendous. You look at Chris Young, you know, what, right around 2 ERA. And if you're looking forward, Peavy and Young could be a deadly odds.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think
and one more thing,
great.
One more thing about the, you know, I was talking about the setup man, Okajima. You know, they're important. And bullpens are so important in this day and age. You know, and they can be huge in playoff success. Case in point, Angels and Red Sox, but two of the best teams in the AL and Major League Baseball this year have two of the best setup men.
Right.
Scott Shields and Hideki Kojima, and they happen to be the only two All-Star setup men. So,
yeah, and
you know,
Los Angeles has 52 wins, one less than Boston, who has the best record in the in the major leagues. So, yeah, I mean, the setup role is huge, and, I mean, Okajima is a big reason because of that. And the Chris Young and Jake Peavy, you know, 1-2 punch is great. And, you know, it really helps both of those guys to have have two veteran guys on their team in Wells and Greg Maddux. So,
good point, yes.
I really think that those guys are going to be real catalysts for each of their teams getting into the playoffs. And possibly, I mean, I could see both of these guys. I could see the Red Sox and the Padres possibly ending up in the World Series. I think it's a very real possibility.
I could see it too, yes.
And one last thing I wanted to mention that we weren't really planning to talk about, but what do you think about the All-Star game? Do you like what it is? Do you like the whoever wins AL or NL gets home field advantage in the World Series, or is that something that, you know, they should just throw out and, you know, just make the All-Star game, you know, kind of meaningless?
I'll keep this simple. No, it's stupid.
Okay.
You know, how can you put the fate of an All-Star game where, let's be real, are they playing 110%? No.
No.
You know, you put your starter pitcher in for two innings, next one, two innings, next one, two innings. I mean, even the thing about the baseball All-Star game is, you know, pitching is such a iffy thing where innings, you know, the amount of innings a pitcher throws, and, you know, pitchers' arms are so delicate that, you know, you fear for injuries in this thing.
Right.
And to give someone the World Series home field advantage, I think that's just stupid. You know, every other league does it by better record.
Right.
You know, and, you know, what's the difference here? I don't get it. And, you know, they did it because they wanted to add meaning to the game. Well, I just completely disagree with
that. Well, do you think they should have this in the middle? I mean, my thing is, in every other sport, correct me if I'm wrong, all of the other All-Star games are at the end of the season.
No, you're wrong.
I am wrong.
Only the NFL does that. And, you know, with NFL, you can't expect them to put in the middle of the season. That would be just like disastrous. But, you know, NBA, it's not, you know, it's like a pickup game for those guys, you know?
Well, yeah, I guess that's what I should have said, is that it's kind of meaningless for the other ones. I mean, like we said, the Pro Bowl is meaningless, the NBA All-Star game is. I tend to agree. I mean, for some reason, a lot of the writers are kind of like, yeah, you know, it's not a bad idea, but, I mean, why not determine the guy who gets home field advantage by how well they play in the regular season?
Exactly.
And not by how, because it's not determined by a team. It's determined by a bunch of players who may not even be in the hunt. I mean, you're going to say like a Cincinnati Red really cares who gets,
you know,
home field advantage?
I was just going to bring that up. Exactly right. You know, what if a Pirate has the game-winning hit? You know, what does it mean to him?
Right. It doesn't mean anything to him.
Yeah, that's a great point, Brennan.
Unless, you know, he happens to be traded to a contender at some point during the
True.
Year.
True.
But let's segue onto the hardwood and talk about the Supersonics hiring of former Warriors and Blazers head coach P.J. Carlissimo. Carlissimo spent 5 years under the tutelage of Greg Popovich at San Antonio. It's his first head coaching job since he was fired by Golden State in '99. And, I mean, Bennett, the owner of the Sonics, repeatedly has said that he wants to model the franchise after San Antonio. And he's done a pretty good job of that, considering that their new GM, Sam Presti, was a San Antonio's assistant GM. And now assistant coach P.J. Carlissimo is now head coach of the Supersonics. Do you like this move? Do you like the fact that he's going to coach, you know, Durant and Green?
I think it's funny what you just said. Yeah, I think every team wants to model the Spurs, you know. I think every team would want to do that. And
it's true.
To answer your question, no. You know, I wanted to look up a little about PJ. You know, he was kind of, you know, I'm only 20, so it was a little before my time in terms of,
right.
You know, he coached kind of in the early 90s. But 183 and 122 in six NBA seasons. Actually kind of got his foot in the door with the NBA with his success at Seton Hall. He took them to a championship game where he lost. But anyway, to get to the Sonics, I don't like it because, you know, if you look at the stars in the NBA, and this is, you know, everybody thinks Durant's going to be a star.
Right.
You know, I haven't heard otherwise from anybody. So that being said, you look at the stars in the NBA, they need that special coach. Phil Jackson, Kobe, and Shaq. Duncan and Popovich, you know, Phil Jackson, Jordan, AI, best success with what coach? Larry Brown.
Larry Brown.
So, you know, I think, to use another cliche here, I think Durant's going to be choked by PJ. Thank you. I'll be here all week, but go ahead.
First off, when you were laughing at me about saying that Bennett wanted to model his team after San Antonio.
Well, I wasn't laughing at you.
Well, I just wanted to point out that not every team has not only plucked their not every team has plucked two pieces from the Spurs.
Oh, I know.
Their GM.
I just
and
meant
assistant coach.
You wanted
to make me look bad, but that's okay.
No, actually, I didn't. I wanted to make the Sonics look bad, and I think I did my job.
Okay.
There.
Well, Carlissimo took the Trailblazers when he coached them to the playoffs three times in the '90s, but much like how Tracy McGrady can't get out of the first round, neither can P.J. Carlissimo. He never was able to advance out of the first round of the playoffs. So are they bringing Carlissimo in, like some have been, you know, kind of whispering, for a year, maybe 2 years, and then they're going to go out and get someone that they want, and this is just,
you know,
kind of like a, you know, like a smokescreen hire? Where they,
you know,
just want to teach these guys defense early on and then go get some other guy?
I was actually going to ask you pretty much the same question. And, you know, after I answer, I'll let you give me your take. But I was going to ask you, is this a 2-year plan? Is this a 1 or 2 year plan? And in my opinion, I mean, it has to be. But
yeah, I think it is too.
If you want continuity with Durant and Jeff Green, who, you know, I think Jeff Green's going to be a great, not great, but, you know, solid, good.
Solid player, yeah.
Yeah. You know, if I'm them, if I'm the Sonics GM, you know, I want somebody who's going to be there for 5-10 years. Maybe, you know, you try to get the best coach out there.
Right, and that's,
you know,
the thing. Maybe the best coach for them wasn't out there right now. Maybe they have their eyes set on another prize, and they're going to be available, you know, a little bit later on.
That could be the case. And, you know, but then again, do you want his most influential years, you know, his rookie year, to be with somebody, though, he's not going to, I'll use the phrase, grow old with, you know?
Right.
You know what I mean? So it didn't make sense to me, but, you know, he obviously has the credentials, and, you know, you brought up the Spurs thing, so, you know, that obviously, you know, makes it look good. But, you know, I question the move. I do.
I think it may end up turning into a good thing, like I said, because PJ did come from the Spurs. He knows defense. He's going to be able to teach Durant and Green how to play, you know, something that's very undervalued in the NBA right now, and that is defense. And the Spurs showed that you can win championships with it. Not too many people are going to watch the NBA Finals because you play defense, but it's going to get a ring in your on your finger, and it's going to get you that big NBA championship trophy. And the fans may not have liked it, but I'm sure the San Antonio fans and San Antonio enjoyed it. So, well, let's get into our another weekly segment, Triple P, Prognostications, Predictions, and Picks. We want to get into a little bit of tennis this week. The Wimbledon is taking place right now in England. Jason, who do you think will end up winning Wimbledon? And let's talk about the men's game and the women's game.
You know, it's been an interesting last 2 weeks at Wimbledon. You know, pretty much marred by, you know, 16 to 20 rain delays. And one of the one example of this was Rafael Nadal in his fourth round match against Rod Soderling. It started on Saturday. Okay, so they went out and warmed up on Saturday.
Right.
Rain delay. They actually finished the match on Wednesday. So that's how much rain has been falling in England, on London, these last 2 weeks. But to get back to, you know, the breaking down the men's game, of course, Federer is the favorite. He's going for his fifth Wimbledon championship, and that would tie the likes of Bjorn Borg for that record.
Right.
Roddick and Gasquet, the Frenchmen, are actually playing right now, and Roddick has the lead. But that'll be an interesting semi with Federer and Roddick. And Roddick, if Roddick's going to beat Federer, which, you know, I'll never count him out because I still have hopes on Roddick, even though he's been disappointing.
Right.
Has had a disappointing career up to now. He's going to have to get the fact that Federer's beaten him twice, back-to-back years in Wimbledon. I believe it was 2003, 2004. Don't hold me to that.
Okay.
But back-to-back years in the finals by Federer. So he's going to have to get the monkey off his back, you know, if he wants to beat Federer here. Quickly, in the other semi, we have the Serbian Novak Djokovic against the name I like to call him, the Dirt Devil, Rafael Nadal. Djokovic had a tough last two matches with Hewitt, who went 4 hours, and then today again with Baghdatis, the Cyprus star. So the last 2 days he's played 8 hours. So edge to Nadal there, you know, who came off a four setter of his own, I believe. So I will go with, to wrap this up, took my sweet old time.
It's okay, no problem.
But I will stick with the favorite,
right?
And I will go with Federer in the top, and I will throw a little upset in here.
Right.
I will go with the big server, the Serbian Djokovic, over the Spanish, who would prefer the French or clay court, in the Dom.
And the
Dom. So that is my final. And Federer, I have winning it his fifth straight Wimbledon.
Okay. Well, my Wimbledon prediction for the men's game is going to be Rafael Nadal. You do, however, bring up a good point. The Serbian that Nadal will be playing. Nadal is playing, you know, his fifth consecutive day. So let's, I mean, fatigue may come into
and if anybody, play here. And if anybody, it wouldn't affect him because, you know, he might be the most athletic and, you know, guy on the tour.
That certainly may be true, but I mean, humans get tired.
Yes.
I agree. The guy is, you know, he's built to last. But, I mean, much unlike the Energizer Bunny, I don't know if Nadal can keep going and going and going. And the fact that he's playing, like I said, his fifth consecutive day is, I mean, that's a lot of tennis.
It is.
And if you have to win, you know, if you have to win three sets, I mean, that's a huge deal. So, be interesting to see how fatigue plays in the Nadal's winning of the Wimbledon. And like I said, I think he will end up beating Roger Federer, who I believe will obviously make it to the finals. And I think Nadal will keep Bjorn Borg's, you know, five Wimbledon championships,
safe,
his own record.
Yep,
yep, keep it there.
That, you know, and Nadal is, you know, I said Federer's in Roddick's head.
Right.
And I think Nadal is in Federer's head because last two French Opens, you know, he beat him. He beat him in both of them. So, you know, and that's the only – it's like the kryptonite to Federer. That's the only thing. But it is on Federer's best surface.
That is true.
This isn't clay court where Nadal is ridiculous. You know, hasn't lost a set in the last 2 years on clay court.
Right.
So, it should be a good final, especially if those two play in it. To switch to the women's.
Right. Let's talk about the women's game.
We have our first finalist, Venus Williams, the 23 seed, won this morning in the semifinal.
Easily.
Over Anna Ivanovic, I believe.
Ivanovic, yeah. Yeah.
Okay,
6-2, 6-4. Basically dominated her.
Yes, that is a domination. And then in the other semi, you have the one seed, Justine Henin versus Bartoli, who's kind of come out of nowhere. Who do you like? Who do you like in the women's?
I can't help but go with one of the Williams sisters, and in this case, it would be Venus Williams. I mean, the fact that her semifinal match, killed Anna Ivanovic, 6-2, 6-4, just absolutely destroyed her. And she's on a roll, and I haven't seen her like this for a long time. And I think Venus is, catapulting herself up there, and I really think that she has the best chance to win this. And I think that she's just on such a high right now, and the adrenaline's flowing, and she's just got everything going for her. So I don't see Venus Williams even losing a set in the finals, regardless of who she plays, and I think she'll win in straight sets.
Kind of like the unmentioned greatness in women's tennis has been Justine Henin. And she's actually trying to complete the Grand Slam, if you will,
right,
winning each tournament. And if she wins Wimbledon, she'll have that.
But no one cares because
the career Grand Slam, excuse me.
But no one cares because obviously she's not a Williams sister.
But when
and she's not Maria Sharapova, so.
But when Venus and Serena are on their game, they're tough to beat, and they've been hurt by injuries over the last couple of years, but. She's a three-time Wimbledon winner going for the fourth, and I like her chances to do that.
Yeah, it'll be a very interesting final at Wimbledon, and I will be tuning in and watching it, and it'll be very fascinating to see who wins this year.
Sure you will.
Well, to get into our last topic, we wanted to mention the Chicago Cubs, who have been playing, awesome, ridiculous baseball lately. I mean, a lot of people counted these guys out. They are now two games above 500, and in the month of June, they only have lost twice. They swept Colorado, they won their Milwaukee series, and they won their Washington series. And those
three
were
out of four. Yep.
Yeah, and those were all away games, and that's huge. And I really think that they can catch Milwaukee, who I believe has lost five straight, and they're just not looking very good right now. And when you have Aramis Ramirez, Alfonso Soriano, and Derek Lee, who's healthy again, batting, and then you have Carlos Zambrano, Rich Hill is pitching fantastically for them, and Ryan Dempster has been very good in the closer role. I really see the Chicago Cubs winning the NL Central now, and maybe Milwaukee trying to get the wild card now. What do you think?
I like that assessment, and what helps is you were right, they have lost three straight, Milwaukee. And, with a lot of these teams, the question marks, last week we were talking about, we were doing our power rankings. We said every team has a question mark, and it's going to be the pitching. And quickly, you mentioned that killer lineup. If Derek Lee and Alfonso Soriano can, live up to their potential,
right?
That's a fierce 1-2-3 good hitters there. The pitching, you mentioned Zambrano. He's the ace, of course. It'll be interesting to see if the other three can pick it up. Rich Hill, who's been good with strikeouts this season. Actually, K's per nine is at 8.31. But the two free agent pickups they had in the offseason, the two pitchers, Jason Marquis and Ted Lilly, I think they'll be key down the stretch. If they can step up into a being a playoff type two or three for the Cubs, And a point about the Brewers.
Yes.
I'm never a huge fan of teams that haven't been there, done that. Look at what the Astros have done the last couple seasons. Not this year, of course.
Right.
But, you know, they had the experience. They went to a World Series. They had experienced players like Pettit, Clemens, who had been there. And even though they had slow starts, they always came back and won the wild card, won the division. And my point is, I like teams with experience, and the Brewers have none of it.
No.
They're a good team.
And they show that on the road. They're 18-24 on the road. So,
yeah,
I mean, they're not playing very well away from home.
And the opposite of that, 30-13 at home, which I believe is the best home record in the NL, which is tremendous. But I'm just not sold on the Brewers.
Yeah, and I mean, the Brewers just lost 3 of 4 to Pittsburgh. And they actually played the Chicago Cubs, lost that series, like I said. And, I mean, Prince Fielder, for as well as he's been playing this season, he hasn't homered since June 25th, and he's batting .227, 5-for-22 in Milwaukee's 10-game road trip, which wraps up in Washington starting Friday. So, you know, it's kind of interesting to see what happens. Maybe they got off to a very quick start, and maybe they may end up falling off at the end. Ben Sheets, however, he's pitching lights out. They have the best closer in baseball, in my opinion, and Francisco Cordero. But with minus Ben Sheets, I mean, who do you go to on that pitching staff after him?
Exactly. That's the problem. And, you know, a month ago, we would have been joking about the Cubs having a shot for the...
Right, I know. We would have...
They've turned it around.
Like the Yankees, right.
You know, and it really is. I don't see St. Louis rebounding. They have too many injuries. I know Carpenter will be coming back soon, but I don't see them being a factor down the stretch here. You know, 7.5, that's kind of on the fence about being able to catch up and get it back into it.
Right, but you were talking about experience, and I mean...
That's true. Oh...
I mean, they have
the definition of that, yes.
Right, Albert Pujols, and once they get Chris Carpenter back, I mean, he may end up being, and probably will be, the catalyst for St. Louis if they want to get back in this. They are only 7.5 out, like you said. I mean, they are only 7.5 out. You didn't say that. My apologies. But their pitching has been atrocious. I mean, they've given up 421 runs, and their offense has been anemic. I mean, with the exception of Albert Pujols, I mean, there's not another guy on this team that is really, you know, hitting all that well. I mean, he leads St. Louis in batting average, home runs, RBI, and runs. And in stolen bases, Scott Rolen is leading the team. So they're not very good at playing small ball. So,
you know, it's funny.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry to interrupt you. But it's funny, you know, at the start of the season, I don't think we'd be having a Brewers and Cubs, you know, divisional race here.
Yeah,
and,
I know.
You know, and I think that's what it's going to be. I'm going to cancel the Cardinals out, but I'm sure maybe not the smartest move
right.
to do. But
so who do you think will end up winning the NL Central?
I wanted to avoid that question.
Right.
I did good at avoiding it, but I'm not sold on the Brewers, so I'll go out and I'll say the Cubbies.
You say the Cubbies? All right.
Yeah.
I believe in Milwaukee. I just think their lineup is way too potent. And I think Ben Sheets, I mean, he's carried the team before, and I think he'll do it again. Maybe if they get some more support from their number two, number three starter. And I just, you know, Francisco Cordero closing the door is, like, huge for them. So,
Harry Carey would be rolling in his grave.
I know he would. I know. But I think Milwaukee will end up taking the NL Central. But that is all the time we have for today, boys and girls. Jason Mish, would you like to add anything before we sign off?
Not really. Great show this week. And keep listening, guys.
Yeah, you guys just keep subscribing to us. We appreciate all you listeners. Keep checking in the blog. Like we said, we update it regularly for you guys, so you guys get some new news, some of our opinions. And we'll see you guys on Monday. Thanks again. This was East Coast Biased. I am Brendan Canny.
And I am Jason Mish.
And we will see you guys on Monday. Thanks again for listening.
Peace.
cry. Sheriff Phillip, don't take a slice of my pie. Money, so they say.